This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shah on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Yo, what up? We are Sharp Money. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. I think I can say we now. I've been on the show enough, right? Yeah, I'm part of the fam. Amal Shah's here.
100.
There you go. Look at that. Dropping some lingo, huh?
Trying.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Adam Burke is here as well. What's up, man? How was the weekend? First weekend, full weekend of college football. It's like your bread and butter, right?
Sure. We'll call it my bread and butter. It was all right. I only made three plays, though, because, I mean, those lines have been up for so long. There wasn't really a whole lot of line equity out there. And 1 and 2 with the three plays that I made, Northwestern, I'd probably like to have back, we'll call it.
Yeah.
But, no, you know what? I mean, every game at this point in time is just kind of a fact-finding mission to really learn about these teams and kind of evaluate going forward.
I wanted to ask you real quick, Ohio State Buckeyes, what's your assessment based on what you saw in week one in Bloomington?
Well, I mean, the defense was fantastic, but Indiana's offense is quite bad, so I don't know if we can really take too much out of that. Honestly, I mean, I kind of expected them to put the kid gloves on Kyle McCord and not really do a whole lot in that one, not show a whole lot of the playbook. They probably didn't feel like they needed to, so I'm fine with it. I did drop them a couple of points in my power ratings just because it was kind of an underwhelming performance, but look, I mean, to me, they dominated a pretty bad offensive team, and I think that's a good sign for them going forward.
College Football Betting Podcast, where you can find a lot of thoughts, actually, on power ratings, right? Which I just listened to, right? Because I know for a fact. All right, let's talk about one of the big topics of the weekend then. Amal is Amal in on Colorado, right? Am I doing this correctly?
No, I think they're going to probably win six games. Just like Duke's season win total was too low, I thought Duke's season win total should have been about 7.5 or 8. I said that earlier. But Colorado, I didn't know what they would be. I wouldn't have bet them over on the 3, Adam. But I think when you saw what Shedeur Sanders was capable and what this offense was capable of doing, and I'm not sitting there suggesting or implying that TCU is Alabama 2011 defensively, but I think you have to reevaluate them a little bit based on the way that offense flourished.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, also TCU marched the football up and down the field on
no
them,
question.
Where TCU lost their quarterback, top two running backs, and, of course, Quentin Johnson, who was a first-round pick.
But they are the same team as last year.
I never said that, but you tried to tell me they lost their offensive coordinator. He did such a great job last night. I'm sure he's going to be getting a head coaching job in the NFL pretty soon.
Well, I mean, that situation at Clemson looks completely different. I'm sure we can talk about that in a couple of minutes, but look, I mean, yeah, Colorado offensively looked very, very explosive. They looked really good. TCU also, I mean, this is not the Gary Patterson defense anymore. Last year they just outscored everybody, won a bunch of close games, all that kind of thing. But to your point, I mean, this was an unprecedented situation with Colorado. We didn't know how it was going to turn out. They wound up with, what, over 80 different players that kind of came in and out of that program, even more than that. So we didn't really know how to handle them. What we found out is they got some dudes. What we don't know for sure is if they have any depth when some of those dudes start to get hurt. So I think in Pac-12 play, they'll really be up against it. But look, I mean, I adjusted my power rating 7.5 points on Colorado. I moved Nebraska down 3 points because they were pretty pathetic against Minnesota. I still don't have 3.5 for that game. I have it 1.5 for Colorado. So, you know, I think that the market has kind of overreacted, but who wants to step in front of the Buffaloes after that performance?
Yeah. I do.
My point is, it's not that I think Colorado's some great team. I think they're going to be more competitive in games than maybe people saw. That 20 points, obviously, against TCU was an absurd number based on the way things played out. I'm not saying that they're going to go 9-3. I think, you know, if they make a bowl game, it's a phenomenal season for them. But
let's also keep in mind, what was TCU's win total last year?
Six and a half?
Yeah.
In that range? I mean, they completely overperformed relative to expectations. Maybe this is just what TCU is going to be this year.
And, by the way, last year they were – like statistically, not a good defense either last
year.
It was part of the reason why everybody kept pointing to, this is going to run out. You cannot keep doing this.
Fair point you guys are both making. However, everybody's defense in the Big 12 is statistically generally not that strong. But one other point I'm making is that, look, I'm not saying that this is a great team, but my God, what did anybody watch in Minneapolis on Thursday night that sat there and said, yo, I cannot wait to put money on this Nebraska team. We might crack 11 points this week.
Well, for me, so the way I did it, and this is a topic that I think is pretty interesting, it goes along with we don't know anything, right? Adam, I saw an offseason number of Nebraska -8.5. I now see Colorado -3. And Amal has said before, right, hey, we don't know anything, so 8.5, they didn't know anything in this number. But my argument is, I have a pretty large sample size that tells me odds makers kind of know what they're doing with this stuff, and I'll trust that they have a general idea, and a number that opened 8.5 and is now 3 the other way, for me, it's purely a number grab. I will be fine taking 3, whatever the result is, when we get to Saturday.
The big issue that I have is Jeff Sims looked like he never played quarterback before.
Exactly.
I mean, he looked really, really bad. So even though from a line equity standpoint, and again, like I said, I mean, I made huge adjustments on both teams, and I got Colorado -1.5. Even with a little bit of line value around that key number of 3, and by the way, this thing's probably not done running out. I mean, this line's probably going to at least touch 4, maybe even go higher than that. I saw in some faraway places they were talking about this being maybe the highest bet side in a regular season game ever. So people are all aboard this Colorado train. Personally, I'm not going to bet the game. No offense. I hope that Colorado wins this game by 30 and the legend keeps growing because I will find spots to go against them when they get to Pac-12 play.
Oh, I mean, Pac-12 play really quickly. What about against Colorado State? If they beat Nebraska and they beat them handily, what does that number look like for Colorado State? Because Colorado State does not have another game, I think, right?
They're off a bye.
They're off a bye, yep.
I don't think the number is going to get too far out of hand with Colorado, and here's why. I think at the end of the day, they're a good offensive team. They're a bad defensive team. I think they'd get exposed by a team like Oregon, Washington, Utah potentially, USC, of course. I think there's going to be pitfalls for them. There's no question about it. But my point is in particular to this game coming up. Nebraska is a completely inept offensive team. There's a reason why there's a coaching change that took place in Lincoln last year. And when you look at this program as a whole right now, this is not a Nebraska team, JBT, that's even on par with some of the decent teams in the Big Ten West. You mentioned it. Jeff Sims was terrible. What did he throw for, like a .114 last week against Minnesota?
3 interceptions, including the one that broke the back. Yeah.
And not only that, the other thing is, you look at Minnesota's ineptitude at quarterback play. I mean, there was about 2 different times on that last drive where they should have had touchdown passes. Jackson makes one of the greatest catches you'll ever see at the collegiate level, and on a throw that if he just throws the ball anywhere in the area code, he's standing there and could have fair caught it for a touchdown. There are problems with Nebraska defensively. Minnesota just wasn't good enough to exploit it.
Well, I mean, Minnesota's a team I was low on. I had that line 4 last week, and I wound up taking Nebraska. That was one of the winners I did have, although I sprinkled the money line and it didn't get there. Right now, I have Colorado a 12-point favorite against Colorado State. If they win convincingly over Nebraska, I wouldn't be shocked if that line is up in the 17 range, maybe higher
16,
than that.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a spot where I may look to back Colorado State, a team that a lot of people liked against Washington State, wound up not playing well. But I think the one really important takeaway here, and John, I know you're modeling the NFL this year, so this will be something you'll be looking at very, very closely. Every team will play its best game and its worst game at some point during the season. For some teams, it's in week 1, whether that's their worst game or their best game. So you don't want to overreact too much in a vacuum to a 1-game sample size. And look, Colorado looked phenomenal. That's great. Good for them. We'll see what they look like this week. We'll see what they look like against Colorado State and then Oregon and USC back-to-back. Look, I'm hoping I get fair numbers on Oregon and USC because I'll bet both sides in those 2 games.
So here's where the argument stems from in reference to Colorado-Nebraska between JVT and I. He said, and I agree with him normally speaking, we saw it in the Stanford-Hawaii game, right? The line went from 10 to 3. That was an overreaction. Stanford dominates that football game, and I agreed with JVT on that. But to me, I said Colorado is a unique football team, one that we've never seen before in college football ever, in the sense that you don't know what they have. You have literally 60 new players on this roster. It's a completely unforeseen situation. So even if the odds makers are the smartest guys in the world, which in my opinion they're not, how do you know what they are? You can't necessarily quantify it. They could get beat by 30 next week. They could win by 30. All I'm saying is it's hard to gauge a team when you don't know what they are, what the players are.
To add to your point and against mine would be, and I think you guys mentioned this on the pod, Texas State. Texas State was a team that pretty much overhauled the whole roster too, right?
Yeah.
And then what they do to Baylor, they went out there, had, 488 total yards and won the game outright. So it does speak to, in the era of the transfer portal, if these teams are going to overhaul everything, it is hard to get a read on what they're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, you know, also we're betting on 18 to 23-year-old kids for the most part, except for some of the quarterbacks that are like 30 around the nation. You know, it's just a higher variance, higher volatility sport inherently, because of what you're dealing with. So now you factor in the transfer portal, you factor in G.J. Kinney had a ton of success at Incarnate Word, brought half of that roster with him to the FBS level. They do what they did to Baylor. So, you know, the big thing is, how do those teams fare over the long haul? Because, you know, it's great to have those players that stood out at the FCS level, or it's great to have those players that were in your system. Well, now everybody has film on Colorado, right? Everybody has film on Texas State. So that's the thing. Now everyone's going to be able to adjust based on what they saw in those games, and then the depth becomes a big issue as we get deeper into the season. Yeah. So in a vacuum, yeah, maybe Colorado ends up being great for these first 3 weeks. I still think they'll be a fade team in Big 12 play, at least as I'm kind of forecasting it going forward.
So I wanted to hit on one thing. I don't think we're going to be done with college football, but I was listening to you, and whenever somebody agrees with me, I'm like, yeah, all right, let's hit this. One of the lines that I was very upset I didn't get on because it moved immediately on Sunday. Can you possibly downgrade a 2-0 team, namely San Diego State?
Yeah, I mean, they're 2-0, but they haven't looked good. I mean, if Curtis Rourke was healthy in week zero, Ohio wins that game and maybe wins that game by a couple of scores. I mean, they were easily going to be the better team in that game. And then San Diego State, in their last game, and I talked about this on the podcast, and thanks for plugging that with Tim Murray, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. You don't want to just gloss over these FBS versus FCS games. Idaho State has won two games total in the last 2 years. They just lost a one-score game to San Diego State where the Aztecs had like 87 passing yards. So, and they didn't really run the ball. I mean, they ran the ball effectively, but it wasn't like a huge performance or anything like that. I downgraded San Diego State 4 points. And I know UCLA didn't look great against Coastal Carolina, but I think UCLA is a good play here this week against San Diego State.
Why? You thought San Diego State would actually throw for less yards against Idaho State?
I mean, they should have dominated Idaho State. They really, truly should have, and they didn't. And that's a bad sign. If you're supposed to dominate an FCS team and you don't, I think that's a concern. I think it's a red flag.
They've had an issue with their passing game for about a decade. The thing that concerns me a little bit with UCLA's offense, 3 interceptions between Garbers and Moore yesterday or on Saturday. But I think this team's going to be a lot more dangerous in week two than San Diego State's offense is.
Turns out playing with a converted safety at quarterback might not be the best way to roll an offense. All right, Adam's not going anywhere. We're going to hit on the National Football League, the news out of there too, Travis Kelce. Want to get one more thought, though, in college football because we have a big game in Tuscaloosa to discuss. That's coming up next year on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings is rolling out happy hour bet boosts each day this week. Today's happy hour boost, hot off the presses, is Jalen Hurts or Justin Fields to rush for a touchdown from -208 to even money. Head to DraftKings now. Take advantage of today's happy hour boost available until 9 p.m. Eastern time. It's JBT, Jonathan Von Tobel, filling in for Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw, you see, it's the round table. We're here. That's a great camera angle. I like it. It looks good. Makes us look like we're all, you know, friendly, simpatico. No, Dustin's not a fan. All right, Adam Burke's alongside. So I mentioned we're going to talk about a couple other things college football related. Before we get to Alabama-Texas, some notable adjustments from your power rankings. You can go wherever you want. Both positive and negative were what?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I mean, I moved up Colorado 7.5 points. I think that's fair for what we saw in one data point. I may have to adjust them up another 7.5 points after this weekend. Who knows? But, you know, I think that, look, what we saw from them is impressive enough to make a significant adjustment. So that's what I did. It's one of the biggest adjustments I've ever made from week one to week two because I don't want to throw my priors away. Like, I did a lot of work in the spring and the summer to get ready for college football season. I don't want to throw it all away off of one game. Texas State was a 5.5 point boost for me as well. Also bumped Stanford 3 points, North Carolina 3 points. Stanford looked much better than I anticipated. Troy Taylor looked really good in his first game there. North Carolina, they had 9 sacks against South Carolina, which if North Carolina gets any semblance of defense, then they're a force to be reckoned with Drake May at quarterback.
Yeah, you mentioned South Carolina. I got some serious concerns for this team. I think it's going to be a long season. I know there were some challenges potentially coming into the season for the offensive line for them, but North Carolina and Gene Chizik's defense really taking advantage of it did a really nice job. What was the one team, just simply from an eye test, not just an adjustment on points, but more towards the top 10 that really impressed you?
That really impressed me?
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't a whole lot of teams in the top 10 that really impressed me except for one that really, really stands out, Florida State.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I will say this. That game could have gone very, very differently. LSU in the first half, they gave up some scoring opportunities. They had some long drives that they weren't able to capitalize on. Things could have gone much, much differently in that game. But Florida State after halftime was very dominant. So I give them a lot of credit for that. I didn't move LSU down too much because I do still kind of respect at least what they were able to do in the first half of that game. They just weren't able to adjust well on the fly. But, yeah, for Florida State, I mean, very, very impressive performance for them. As far as teams I downgraded, I mean, how can you not downgrade Northwestern, you know, after the performance that they had? Kent State is clearly worse than I ever thought they could be. So I dropped them 4 points.
Are they your lowest-rated team?
No, FIU is my lowest rated team.
Okay.
And then Illinois was a team that I actually dropped 4 points. I was very, very unimpressed with them. They did win over Toledo. They won on a game-winning field goal at the buzzer. But without Tommy DeVito and Chase Brown, that offense looked really bad. Luke Altmaier, the quarterback, was also the leading rusher, which basically never happens at Illinois. Never really happens to a Brett Bielema coach team. And also Toledo had over almost 400 yards. So they're over 400 yards, actually. So Illinois was a big drop for me of 4 points in my power ratings.
What do you do with a game like last night? So Clemson-Duke, we watched that happen. We were talking about this earlier. Like, you can make the argument almost every game, right? But there was a lot of variance there with Clemson, a lot of missed kicks, red zone turnovers, an instance in which you could look at that easily and go, Clemson maybe can eke out a win there. So maybe even that is worth a downgrade. But how do you handle a dynamic like that where a lot of variance happened within a single game?
Yeah, I think it's really tough to kind of figure out what to do with Clemson because not only was the performance pretty underwhelming, also they gave up about 5.8 yards per play to Duke, which shows you kind of where the state of the Clemson defense is. But also the comments from Dabo Swinney about Garrett Riley. Like, it seems like they're not on the same page already, which is not a great thing when you talk about week one, when you talk about going out and handpicking this guy to be your offensive coordinator. So I'm really concerned about that. I mean, and then maybe it's a little thing, maybe it's just a game thing, but Cade Klubnik doing the blow-by on Dabo Swinney, not really giving him, you know, a handshake or low five or whatever they're supposed to do. It just seems like things are not going well within that program. And that's something that ultimately will leak over to the field. So I think I downgraded Clemson 2.5 points, but I'm open to interpretation with that. May end up downgrading them more.
Yeah, I love the way you phrased it with Clemson, simply because to me, I look at, yes, the Maffa fumble was one that was forced, but you have a missed field goal, you have a turnover itself. Even the two other turnovers in the game, one that they had with Klubnik and Shipley, and then the one they recovered, these were not forced plays. These were errors made without anyone contesting it. I just still think they're a good team. But the problem for me is going to be when they face an elite defense or somebody that's really comparable and competent, like a Florida State, they're going to be in trouble. I'll tell you right now, guys, if things don't change very quickly in 2 weeks and 3 weeks when these teams match up in Death Valley, you're going to see Florida State as a road favorite in that game.
Where would you have that now?
Yeah, I think you will see Florida State as a road favorite in that game. Right now, I have, let's see here. I think I have that game roughly in that range where I do have Florida State, you know, kind of in a pick'em slight favorite situation.
Okay.
But again, that's something where I still have to go through and make sure I evaluate Clemson's performance. I don't just look at the score and the yardage. I look at the drive logs because, to your point, I mean, you know, they had a couple of fumbles in prime scoring territory. Then if they don't fumble those, who knows how that game ends up playing out. So, you know, sometimes things happen. The ball is, you know, not round. It's an oblong-shaped ball. So, it's, you know, it bounces the wrong way sometimes.
Well, you know, when you build your name, your program in name, image, and likeness of God, just like Dabo Swinney did, you know, things are going to turn around perfectly fine.
So I do have one serious question. How come, and I'm not critical of anybody that's religious or they're not religious, how come nobody ever praises God when they lose?
Oh, I thought, dude.
I was just curious where that was going. Like, you know, hey, God wanted us to lose today.
Adam, I think you were along my path. I thought you were going to go with the other guy. I thought that was going to be. Why doesn't anybody praise Satan?
Adam's like, I can't even hear a thing right now. I have no comment. Let's keep moving.
All right.
Yeah, I just, look, I think it's really tough. By the way, I think I have Florida State right now a 3-point favorite on the road in Clemson.
Yeah.
Ooh,
there
okay.
You go.
Yeah, there
what
you
was
go.
The original
full
number? Three or three the other way?
The original number would have been, I think, Clemson minus 1.5, minus two in that range. But, look, I mean, a lot of things could change, too, between then and now.
Top,
so,
top four, top five team Florida State by your rankings?
Florida State would be fifth.
Okay.
Oh, who do you have in top four?
Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama.
Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama. Okay. All right. Makes sense. Speaking of Alabama, really quickly, full seven. We saw, like, so you know, some spots on Sunday put up an 8, went down to 7.5. I know there's some guys that are a little beat up in the defensive backfield that maybe could miss the game. I know Saban's doing some gamesmanship stuff with that. What do you make of the number? Where do you put it in terms of Alabama and Texas? And what do you make of both of their performances? Are you, because I made this case on Sunday, I think you can make the argument that because you saw Jalen Milroe for the first time, you would be willing to tweak your numbers because the number did open up 8 after the offseason number was 7.
Yeah, I have it right on 7. Okay. And I don't really think that we saw too much from either one of those teams in week one. I mean, Middle Tennessee is a team that they're kind of struggling right now, to say the least. And Rice is a team that hasn't been good for a very long time. Look, I mean, the big talking point, and everybody knows this, I'm not saying something that people don't know. If Quinn Ewers is healthy in that game last year, Texas wins outright.
Correct.
So people are going to look at that and say, okay, I can get 7 with Texas here this week when Ewers is at least going into the game healthy. I think people are going to look at that and say, hey, it's probably worthwhile. I think Alabama is as vulnerable as they've been in a long time. Maybe not. Maybe Saban's just going to pull this thing together, and Milroe is a guy who can run. He's a dual threat type of guy. Maybe that's something that, you know, kind of befuddles the Texas defense a little bit. I think it's a really, really tough game, and I think it's one where at 6.5, 7. People bet Alabama. At 7.5, they bet Texas. And we'll see where the line ultimately ends up.
I think getting points in this game is a premium. I think it's going to be a tight game, 28-24, somewhere in that range, you know, 31-27, that type
and
of
that
football
was,
game.
That was something I was talking about with our program director, John Goulet, when I was down at the Circa for a meeting here before the show. Like, is Alabama going to be maybe an under team this year where they're not going to have the big explosive passing plays with Milrow and they're going to win games, you know, 34-10, 27-10, 7-10, something like that, you know? Is that maybe what Alabama's going to be this year? If so, is 54.5 maybe a little bit high on that game?
Well, the problem with Milrow is, though, everything's covered up, and there's one play, it's 3rd and 8, and he's at his own 22-yard line and goes 78.
Right, exactly.
I mean, he's so capable of just destroying a situation so easily. Real quick, I want to get your guys' take on this. I think this might be the most important game, at least in September, for two programs in a game. You know, Ohio State plays Notre Dame. That's going to be an important game for both sides. But to me, if Texas loses this game, how does the rest of the season shape up? Because everything's, like, going towards college football playoff for them. If Alabama drops this game, when was the last time they had such an early season loss? How does this team respond? You have no more margin for error possible there. I just feel like there's a lot of pressure on both sides in this one.
Yeah, I think so. And also, I mean, for Texas, it's kind of an if not now, when type of thing. Because, like we said, they should have beaten Alabama last year.
Yep.
This year, they've got their quarterback back. Alabama doesn't. They have a much less experienced guy compared to Bryce Young. So, I know the game's on the road in Tuscaloosa, but, I mean, if you're Texas, you kind of got to look at this and say, we got to win one of these here soon. Mm-hmm. One of these enormous top 10 caliber type of games. We've got to do that soon, and maybe it'll be this one.
I mean, I would say, too, you mentioned no margin for error. For the most part, you're right. But if for either team, you're looking at a potential one loss on your resume. People look at those, right? My losses to Texas and or my losses to Alabama on the road. I don't think people would look at it. If they go on with one loss, I think they'd be perfectly fine.
No. If you lose the game and you go, you win 10 in a row, you're fine. But what I'm saying is now you can't lose to LSU. You can't lose to anybody else. Like, to me, the one thing, if you look at the Ohio State-Notre Dame game, if one of those teams loses, it's really not that big a deal. If Ohio State beats Michigan and Penn State, they're going to get in the college football playoff. That's what I'm saying. I think because the SEC still is so competitive, could they potentially lose this game to Texas and then – they have to beat Georgia in the SEC title game. I've already got Georgia from the East, but that's all I'm saying.
Okay. I agree. I'm not sorry. You don't have to get so intense. All right. Adam Burke is going to stick around for one more. When we come back, we'll see the latest is in terms of the market with the news that Travis Kelce hyperextended his knee and is, quote, in doubt, even though he's officially questionable, for the matchup with the Detroit Lions on Thursday.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Updated NFL betting guide out now throughout the NFL preseason. The VSIN experts like Adam Burke, who's here, have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide has picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, and how about this? An article about football contest strategies. Good stuff. If you want the best, the most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. For those $19, sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. I got too excited. I was trying to sell too hard. AP Top 25 poll is out, guys. Colorado is the 22nd best team in the country.
I'm not a big fan of the polls.
It's truth.
Well, no, the reason why I say that is not because what the rankings are. The people that vote in these polls are at a game they're covering. So they're missing most of the other games that are taking place during the day.
What? They don't go and back and watch the games that they're voting, teams that they're voting?
Not because the AP has to be in by 11 a.m. on Saturday. I mean, Sunday, excuse me.
This is one of the oldest. Newspaper stuff is great. I've got a deadline. Use the internet. All right.
I have them the 70th best team in the country for it.
What? Is that allowed, Amal?
Yeah, of course. Why not?
All right, just double checking.
For now.
Amal's been like Dion these last couple of days. Do you believe? He keeps asking me over and over again.
No, my whole point is, Adam, and you made the point, JVT made the point about Texas State. All I'm saying is we sit there and act like these bookmakers who put Leicester City at 5,000-1 to win the Premier League, that sometimes they can't be wrong on a team. That's all my point.
I mean, we're all wrong on teams. This side of the counter, we're all wrong on teams. I agree with you,
but we're sitting there acting like all of a sudden Colorado winning one game, who has a season win total the same as Northwestern. My point is, like, people are saying, oh, it's an overcorrection. Maybe, but you know what? Nebraska looks like they suck.
I mean, I'm not going to argue that point. I just – look, I mean, here's the thing, I guess, is – and I don't believe in the AP poll either. I don't really care. I have my power ratings. I have my rankings. That's what I go with. But it makes a mockery of the entire process to all of a sudden make Colorado a top 25 team in the country because they're not.
No, but hold on. Here's the problem with the polls, and this is why the college football playoff is the only thing that's better than the polls in. Why do you have a poll after week one? I mean, to me, you don't know what these teams are. My personal
reality, everybody should go in unranked. You shouldn't have the first rankings until
that, too.
Exactly
right. Until conference play starts.
My only thing is, and granted, Georgia's number one because they've got so much talent back, but to me, even if the defending national champion lost every player on their team, they should be number one to start the season.
Number one in our hearts. And in the National Football League, Kansas City Chiefs. I assume you guys like the Chiefs, like from a narrative standpoint. Travis Kelce, hyperextended knee. Market's freaking out. We're down to 5 with a total of 52.5. Adam Burke, what do we do here? I mean, you sit back, you wait. I should note, and this was tweeted by Ian Rappaport. He said he was listed as limited today. So generally on injury reports for practice, I always usually take limited as the guy's going to play. So we'll see if that's going to be the case here. But Travis Kelce, hyperextended knee, and that is magnified, of course, by the wide receiver room as a whole for Kansas City.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not like, you know, the whole Cam Rising thing with Utah last week, for example. I think Kyle Whittingham knew all along that he wasn't going to play, so he was able to prepare for it. When something happens 2 days before a game, you don't really have as much time to prepare for it, and tomorrow's just a walkthrough for Kansas City anyway, so it's not like it's going to be, you know, an actual practice or anything like that. So, yeah, this is something that definitely does have an impact, and Kelce is a guy that opens up the middle of the field, opens up the outside of the field, helps the wide receiver room, helps the running game, all those different types of things. I also think that there were people that were kind of eagerly waiting to bet on Detroit anyway, and now they just have an excuse to do it. So I could definitely see a little bit of an adjustment with Kelce potentially being out, but some of this is also just piggyback traffic saying, well, you know what, I wanted to bet the Lions anyway, so now I'm just going to do it.
I don't think Kelsey's going to play. And the reason is this is the season opener. It's a non-conference game. If it was an AFC game, it might be a little bit more important because they have the Jags up on deck next week, and you have 3 additional days of rest. If you're concerned at all that this could be a lingering issue, you have only one goal, and that's to be in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl at the end of the year. I don't think you worry about one game out of 17. If he can't go, you're still a very talented team. They didn't just win the Super Bowl because of Kelce and Mahomes. There's still other guys on this team that can make plays. So I don't expect to see him play on Thursday.
Well, I mean, do we know, like, anything about the injury, how it happened, when it happened, why it happened? Is there video, anything like that? No, we're just all getting reports that he hyperextended his knee. Now, maybe there were some people that were practiced saw it, but that's all we're hearing. Oh, he hyperextended his knee. Nothing more than that.
And if there's anybody who wants this to be as vague as hell in terms of what happened with the knee, it's Andy Reid and the Chiefs.
Right.
Just put that out there in terms of, obviously, the gamesmanship nonsense and whatever. So I wouldn't be surprised, and I'll ask you this then. Much like we talked about with Utah and Florida. He's officially ruled out. What is the buy point on Kansas City? Because you know the market's obviously going to head in one direction.
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I mean, I don't set my own NFL numbers, so I don't know if I would necessarily have a buy point that I could compare my number to the market number or anything like that. I mean, look, I this doesn't go any lower than 4.5, I wouldn't think, no matter what.
I agree.
I don't know if I'm going to have a buy point on Kansas City. I wasn't interested in the game anyway, and I don't think this is really going to change my mind.
Because think about it. I mean, to your point, if it gets to 4.5, we're saying a tight end is worth 2 points to a
point
spread.
Yeah, that's way too much.
That's it. That is a lot.
It's excessive.
Yep.
And again, it is week one, right? Everyone's eager to bet on the NFL. There's, you know, especially from recreational bettors who are rarely price sensitive anyway, you know, they're just going to look at this game and go, oh, it's a standalone NFL game on Thursday night to kick off the season. I'm going to bet it. Mm. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with it.
I don't disagree with you, but to me, JBT, if it's 4, it's an obvious buy for me, at least on Kansas City, but I don't think we get that low.
All right, let's go to a number that's been moving over the last couple of days. I've gotten Amal's thoughts on this. I feel strongly about it as well. What do you think is behind the last 3 or 4 days, or maybe even a week, the push for Green Bay here? Because this thing's down to 1 now, and now that we're at 1, I don't think it'd be surprising if Green Bay went off as a favorite by the time we got to Sunday.
No, I do think that there's a decent chance that Green Bay goes off as a favorite. I mean, look, you know, it's always funny when you talk about the preseason because a lot of people are in the camp that the preseason doesn't matter.
But
then you have a team that looks really good, and then all of a sudden the preseason matters. I think Pittsburgh is another one who looked incredible, at least with their first team offense in the preseason. That number is kind of, you know, there was the Brock Purdy situation too with the 49ers and the Steelers, but that line's come down, you know, below that key number of 3 now. And I think it's kind of a similar thing here where, you know, Jordan Love looked good in the preseason. A lot of people started saying, hey, maybe this dude is a legit NFL quarterback. Hey, Packers over 7.5. I like that. You know, so it was just kind of a lot of steam over a couple of week period that, you know, now that limits have increased, now that people are actually starting to bet on these games, you know, we see a little bit of love for Green Bay there. And again, I'm one of the people who's not high at all whatsoever on Chicago this season. Worst defense in the NFL last year. Fields takes way too many hits for me to think he can get through 17 games. So we kind of have an extension of sort of the preseason thoughts carrying over into week one here.
It's a great point you make in terms of this defense being as bad as it was last year. That's definitely an area of concern. I want to quickly ask you, 49ers and Steelers. This is an interesting spot here for San Francisco on the road now. Numbers at 2.5, or excuse me, down to 2. Total of 41 in this game.
Steelers are on every teaser, too, by the way.
Every
right?
Cleveland and Pittsburgh are massive teaser liability, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell me a little bit about what you think of Pittsburgh this year in a very competitive division and opening up with a very tough team.
So it's funny because actually I wrote up the AFC North preview in our original NFL betting guide back in June, and I was pretty adamant in saying, you know, the Mike Tomlin stat that we've all heard 575 times about how he's never had a losing season.
What?
I think that he's going to have one this year. That's what I wrote back in June. And then I watched him in the preseason. I went, man, Kenny Pickett looks different. Like, George Pickens really helps this offense. They've got weapons. They've got talent. They're going to stop giving it to 3 yards in a cloud of dust, Najee Harris, and give it to Jaylen Warren a little bit more. Like, they start doing some different things offensively and kind of took the cap off the defense a little bit and started throwing downfield some more. We know this defense will be good. It just is good every single year. So even though I would still lean under with Pittsburgh, just because I think the division strength is really, really good, I'm not looking to fade them early in the season like I thought I would be.
So we brought up teasers really quickly. What's your limit in terms of price on a 6-point teaser? Because that's one of the low-key stories we don't really talk about a lot.
Right.
The price of the teaser has gotten up to like $1.45 in some spots.
Yeah, is it that high now?
Inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation's happened in the sports betting world, too, and specifically with teasers. I wouldn't want to go – I mean, depending on the nature of the teaser, especially if, you know, it is kind of the long teaser that I'm sort of looking for, maybe up to like minus 120, minus 125 is really about the highest I'd want to go. But a lot of places aren't even offering you minus 120 anymore. So, you know, it becomes a very difficult thing. And fortunately, I will say, while there are a lot of pitfalls to being out here in the state of Nevada, where we don't have as many options as people do in other states, we have some fairer pricing on things like that, where you can still get, you know, some decent teaser value in town.
Yeah, that's a great point you bring up, JVT and Adam, in terms of the pricing on it. It's really gotten out of whack to a certain extent. So it's something you just got to kind of look around for to see what you can get. Also, one other thing I want to add, just make sure you read what the rules are, because some places a teaser and a push is a refund. Other places it's a loss.
I'm looking right now to just price some teasers around and whatnot and see where they're at. I know, let's see, Cirque is at $1.30, so we've got to look around. And see, look, there's a website idea, huh? Just that, bam,
right.
Teaser prices.
Yeah, and it's tough because it has to some degree kind of taken me out of the teaser market because, you know, every time you move up 5-10 cents, you lose equity on it.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Adam Berg, I lied. I think I said like 10 minutes ago that you were going to be gone after this, but that's not true. You are going to be around. Do you still like baseball with football here?
Yeah, I mean, it's going a little bit better for me of late, so I like it a little bit more now again.
All right, now that nobody's paying attention, right?
Now we're going to
start to get this thing even. All right, we'll hit on some baseball as well before we get you out of here. It is Sharp Money, and remember, check it out up on the website, VSiN.com, the updated NFL betting guide, which is absolutely fantastic. And yes, you need it before the season begins on Thursday. Come on.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The best Thursday of the year coming up, and it's all about NFL opening night. Football's back, folks. DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, hooking up new customers with a can't-miss offer to celebrate. Place your first $5 NFL bet and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Don't wait until kickoff to get in on the hype. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code SHARP. New customers get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you bet just $5. It's code SHARP only on DraftKings Sportsbooks. The crown is yours. JVT wrapping it up here, filling in for Patrick Maher today. Amal Shaw, Adam Burke is here. I've got $5, but this bad boy is going toward a Labatt Blue after this thing. I tried one yesterday. We talked about it yesterday. Tried one for the first time. I'm in. I'm hooked. It was awesome. You love Labatt Blue, huh?
I do. I very much enjoy Labatt Blue. Look, when you grow up playing hockey and your friends are all older than you, You end up drinking a lot of Labatt Blue in the locker room.
Let's go get a Labatt Blue, Berkey, eh?
I'm in. Yeah. I'm in. Let's do it. Let's get a Labatt Blue sponsorship if anyone's out there listening.
I'm in. Now I want to try. I think they have other Canadian beers here.
Well, have you ever had a Molson?
No.
Molson's good.
Yeah? Yeah. Is it Labatt Blue, though?
No.
Okay, there we go.
No.
Question answered.
Molson, the kid played for UCLA. His family had founded
Molson. Molson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was about to cut you off, but I let you go because I was like, there's no way Amal Shaw is about to give me a beer recommendation right now.
No shot.
Has Greg Peterson rated Labatt Blue yet on his
that's a good
series
point.
Of rating beers?
That's a good point. We'll have to see. Ooh, now I'm going to be interested.
You can't get it out here, except for like at Bar Canada.
Yeah, or like a Total Wine, I would assume, maybe? Maybe?
I don't even know if I've seen it out there.
That's a good point. I don't think I've seen one out there either. All right. Either way, we're not going to break bread, but we're for sure going to grab a Labatt after the show. All right, Major League Baseball. Let me ask you this. This might be a weird question, but I feel like there's some credence to it. Does the market change at all in baseball post-football season start? And what I mean by that is, like, I would assume, like, public focus goes from there, which was probably somewhat minimal already, because baseball, you know, baseball, whatever, straight to football. And thus, like, do the numbers get tighter? There's just, I would assume, the percentage of sharp money in the pool kind of skyrockets because there's less public influence. Is that, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I see exactly what you're saying. I think there are a lot of good points there. The first is, yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot less public money, especially on Saturdays and Sundays. So, you know, any line move is going to be very, very sharp in nature. For the most part, they are in baseball anyway because the public handle is just not that large. I do think that a lot of times the setting of the numbers is just so algorithmic. It's so formulaic at this point that, you know, it's not like there's a bad number necessarily, but there may be some situations where, and I kind of talked about this on my podcast, VSiN Daily Baseball Bets, where you may run into spots where props are not priced properly. Because pitchers will be on innings limits or pitch counts or something like that, and the manager will say something, and the books just won't even notice it. Like, it'll just go by the wayside because they're more worried about booking the games that have the larger handle on them. So you may find a spot where an outs prop could be really valuable because the manager's going to go, yeah, he's going to throw 60 pitches tonight, but his outs prop might be that he's going to go 5 2/3 or something like that. So I think there will be some discrepancies with that as we go throughout September here that people may be able to take advantage of.
So really quick, so baseball almost at the end of the season takes on a preseason nature where it's just making sure you're on top of information when it comes to some of the roles that some of these guys are going to play.
Yeah, I think that part's important. I mean, also, you know, there are a lot of bad teams.
Yes.
And understanding which bad teams are still invested and which aren't. Like, for example, I mean, the Pirates have won 5 of 6 games. They just beat Corbin Burns yesterday. They're about to get going here at 3:35 Pacific time against Brandon Woodruff and the Brewers. Like, I'm not on Pittsburgh in that game, but they still care. As opposed to, I don't think the Cardinals do. I don't think the Padres really do. The Mets, you know, all three of those teams, like, their true talent level can win them some games here and there. But these are not young guys fighting for roster spots, fighting for reps, fighting for playing time. Those are teams with established big leaguers that are just upset about how the season's gone. They've kind of checked out already. So you get a lot of big favorites in the month of September. But I think if you can isolate the dogs that are still playing with a little bit of passion, those may be some teams that could play a little bit of spoiler.
Let's switch gears a little bit here. Go to the National Football League very quickly. Any particular team that you're kind of wanting to see how they perform in week number one? You know, look, we know what San Francisco, Kansas City, Philly probably are going to be. But is there a team that's kind of in the middle of the pack or somewhere towards the top where you're like, hey, I want to see what they show us in week number one?
Yeah, I don't understand why you don't want to talk baseball in September, Amal. But we can go to the NFL.
I would love to if there were more competitive division races.
I had like 10 questions. You know, that's fine.
Look, I would say two teams I'm really interested in seeing actually play each other in week one. It's Miami and the Los Angeles Chargers. I want to see what the Dolphins look like. I want to see how one-dimensional they are on offense because the running back by committee situation, two of them are hurt, and none of them I think will be all that effective. So I want to see how one-dimensional their offense is. I want to see if, you know, Tua has made the necessary adjustments in terms of not hitting his head on the field when he gets sacked. And I also want to see what that defense ends up doing, especially with the adjustment to not having Jalen Ramsey. Are they going to be able to shut down, say, a really high-flying offense like the Chargers? And on the Chargers side, with Kellen Moore, it was all glowing reports in the preseason about how everybody looked, how Justin Herbert looks in this offense, about the throws that they're making. You know, Keenan Allen is healthy. Mike Williams is healthy, at least for now. But the Chargers always find a way to charger. That's just what they do. It's kind of the Clemsoning thing. That's just what they do. So you got two teams here. I think I'm really curious to see how they go head-to-head in that game there, one of the late games on Sunday, just to kind of set the tone for the rest of the season.
All right, if we're going to go to the National Football League then, the other game that does stick out, the slow trickle of support for the New England Patriots against the Philadelphia Eagles. The peak was 5.5. We're down to 3.5 at a couple of shops. This is one of those. I'm actually, this is part of the experiment on the website we're doing with John Von Model. There are a couple of the games where I'm like, man, I don't want to be on that side. John Von Model says Philly all the way. I'm like, I actually kind of like New England coming into this year, but what do you make of the slow trickle of support here for the New England Patriots week one?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't really know what to make of it.
Yeah.
I don't really believe in it, but at the same time, I don't really have a reason to say that it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, for Philadelphia, obviously they have a tremendous amount of talent on both sides of the ball. They should be one of the better teams in the NFC once again. And for New England, expectations are very, very low. And maybe it's just one of those things where, you know, you kind of got a lower scoring expectation. You expect Belichick in week one to be really good. I guess all of those things are possibilities. Mac Jones isn't looking over his shoulder as much now as he previously was, wondering if the job was fully his. Maybe all of these things just kind of help. But, I mean, all of those are just kind of anecdotal things. From an analytics standpoint, from looking at the two teams, the two rosters, the performances, I don't really see a reason to be excited to bet on New England here.
John Von Model says so too.
I would agree with you guys. It would be hard to back the Patriots in this spot. Doesn't mean they can't cover or win this game outright, but I think Philly, to me, is going to have a big year. I don't know if they're going to get through the NFC. I like San Francisco a lot. But overall, I just think that Super Bowl was somewhat taken from them. I didn't like the penalty call, and I think they've got some unfinished business this year.
How do you have a big year when you don't even win the division?
What do you mean?
Because the Dallas Cowboys are winning that division, baby.
Maybe, but here's the thing. At the end of the day, can you get to Las Vegas?
I mean, it doesn't matter. Philly's not winning that division. The Cowboys. By the way. I'll call it right now. I'm going to go them all right now.
What's that?
Farther point of elimination, Philly, Dallas, give me Dallas.
Let me ask you a question. Who won the NFC West in 1993? Nobody knows. Nobody cares who wins the division. My point is you got to win Super Bowls.
Right. And I'm telling you that they're going to make a farther run.
I hear you. All I'm saying is whether Philly wins the division or not.
Just going to backpedal two seconds.
I'm not backpedaling. I'm just saying that this team, Super Bowl or bust. That's the goal.
Here, we'll bring you
The vibe I'm getting is you're ready for that Labatt Blue.
That's right. Yeah, I am. I mean, we got 2 minutes left. Here's my thing. How about this? I'll add to one of your things, but actually I'll take away from it. I'm not sold on Brock Purdy. I think – now, there's a reality where the 49ers still win the division, but I think they still go under their win total. I think this is the weakest group of quarterbacks that Shanahan's gone to bat with in an NFL regular season. I think that there is more weaknesses for San Francisco than the market has accounted for.
I think it's a fair argument. I really do believe that's a fair argument. At the same time, that roster is incredible. So, like, all Brock Purdy has to do is not screw it up.
Their offensive line is kind of worse this year. I would, you know what I mean? Outside of, obviously, the strength at left tackle and Trent Williams. But when you look at, like, the offensive line, it's a little bit shaky. I just think because they have the highest power-rated coach in NFL history, in Kyle Shanahan, I think that we gloss over maybe some of the things that could hold them back.
I don't think you're wrong on Purdy. I think there's 20 quarterbacks you can play in San Francisco, potentially. But when you look at the positions, as Adam alluded to, there's probably, Adam, six guys in their roster that are one, two, or three at the tops of their position in the National Football League.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty fair. I think that's definitely a fair statement to make. I mean, look, you know, I think that the Purdy thing, again, he was the last pick of the NFL draft for a reason, right? I mean, it's not like this guy was a high-round draft pick or anything like that. I don't know. I mean, I think at this, from a skill position standpoint, they're incredible, especially as long as George Kittle's okay. You know, that's something that's going to be a concern throughout the course of the season as well. How healthy is Kittle? You know, you got the Nick Bosa distraction kind of going on the defensive side as well. But I don't know. I feel like the rest of the roster is good enough to overcome the quarterback play. To me, I think it's kind of what does Purdy look like mid-season and beyond. Because if he's bad at the outset, so be it. But if he doesn't get any better throughout the season, that's the issue.
All right, Adam Burke, College Football Betting Podcast, new episode with you and Tim. Are you on Monday? What's today, Tuesday? Are you on Tuesdays?
Yeah, we record Monday night for Tuesday.
Yeah, oh, that's why I got confused. Yep, so Monday night for Tuesdays. Check out everything on the website of VSiN.com. Check out the updated NFL betting guide as well. We're all done. Dustin's been done for like an hour, apparently, but we're all done here on Sharp Money. Check out everything we have to offer over the website of VSiN.com. We'll see you.